Tokyo Podcast Episode No. 9.
Hey everybody, on today's show I'm going to be talking to a gentleman who goes by the name Unrested, who has a very popular YouTube channel called JFAC, where he makes all sorts of videos about his life in Japan. Hey everybody, welcome to Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, I'm going to be talking to a gentleman who goes by the name Unrested, who has a very popular YouTube channel called JFAQ. And he has over 140 videos documenting all aspects of his life in Osaka. And actually, his YouTube channel was part of the inspiration for me moving to Japan. It was after watching his videos that I decided to move to Japan. So I'm really excited to talk to him. That's going to be a little bit later on in the show. But first, I want to talk about computers, and specifically supercomputers. Now, what's a supercomputer? Well, in the realm of supercomputing, these things are obviously not your desktop computer. Imagine something the size of your refrigerator and a few hundred of them filling a giant room. And these things are typically used by universities or major corporations to do massive amounts of calculation. For example, I think many times in Japan, they use them to try to predict earthquakes. So in this realm of supercomputing, there's a lot of competition between countries as to who can produce the fastest supercomputer. And recently, the Japanese company Fujitsu took the lead in producing the world's fastest supercomputer. And this thing is able to perform 10 quadrillion calculations per second. Now, what is that? What does that even mean? Well, quadrillion is one with 15 zeros after it, and this is able to perform 10 times that. So obviously, this computer can perform some serious calculations compared to your desktop computer. It's about 100,000 times faster than what your desktop computer is. And some people even claim that these supercomputers are getting close to the calculation potential of the human brain, which is kind of scary. But supercomputing is very interesting because it represents the cutting edge of computing technology. We obviously are not going to, you know, suddenly carry around these refrigerator-sized computers, but the technology that goes into those supercomputers eventually trickle their way down into our laptops and iPhones and iPads, etc. So when you actually kind of think about how much computing power is in your phone compared to, say, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's huge. And that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. So it's really exciting that Japan has taken the lead. Apparently, they've received interest from many different companies about licensing this technology, including a small U.S. defense company called Cyberdyne Systems, who are interested in taking this technology and implementing it into their supercomputer, which they call Skynet. So some really good things I think we'll see as a result of that. But if you're into robots, then I would definitely recommend checking out the International Robot Exhibition that's happening at the Tokyo International Exhibition Center from November 9th to the 12th. The theme of this is Making a Future with a Robot. I don't know what that means, but apparently this show is all about how robots are going to play a big role in our future. And it's interesting, actually, because they got all kinds of robots there. You know, stuff, huge things that you manufacture in cars, down to little tiny robots that, you know, vacuum your house. So they've got over 1,000 booths on display with all different kinds of robots. So I definitely recommend checking that out. If you're into robots, I'll post a link on my website to their website. But it's at the Tokyo International Exhibition Center. Runs from November 9th to the 12th. I am pleased to introduce my next guest today. It goes by the name Unrested, who has been making YouTube videos ever since he arrived in Japan 5 years ago. He has over 140 videos and over 850,000 views on his YouTube channel. And what I like about Unrested videos, unlike many other foreigner-made videos here, is he goes into a lot of details about the Japanese culture and what it's actually like to live here and deal, work, and live with the Japanese. So I'm really excited to talk to him about his insights living in Japan. Hey, Unrested, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, I got to tell you something that you don't know, but your YouTube channel is actually the reason why I'm in Japan.
Really?
Yeah, seriously. Because,
that's flattering.
Because I'll tell you why. It's because a few years ago, I sold my business in Canada, and I was kind of traveling around the world trying to figure out where I wanted to live. Mm-hmm. And I'd been through Japan many times, and I actually used to live here when I was a kid. I lived down in Oita on the island of Kyushu.
Oh, okay.
But I was a kid. I was like 6 years old, you know, and I never really considered living in Japan as an adult. I had all those kind of myths about Japan that most gaijin have, like it'd be too expensive, it'd be too difficult, the culture is too rigid. I never even really considered it. And then I was living in Germany for a while and wasn't really digging that too much. So I went back to my home country of Canada, and I was just kind of surfing the web, and I came across your videos. And I can't remember what you were up to, like maybe 100 and something at the time. So I started watching all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And after I watched all of them, I was like, damn, I got to go to Japan. I realized that because I'd always been here on holiday, you know, and I knew I knew how much different it is when you actually live here.
Yeah.
But I never had any insight into what it was like to live in Japan. You know, mm-hmm. I never really talked to anyone like, what's it like to actually live there as an adult and actually work there? So after I saw your videos, I was like, you know what? Maybe it's not as bad as I thought. And I made the move, and a month ago, I arrived in Japan.
Wow, that's exciting. I never would have suspected that.
So tell me, but this show's not about me. tell me, you're originally from America, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And how long have you been in Japan now?
Yeah, going on 5 years now.
Wow. And what made you decide to come to Japan?
Well, I was a teacher in America, just like I'm a teacher here. I was an art teacher in America. And I was actually at a public school that had the art program taken away. The government just didn't want to fund it anymore. So I was out of a job. I wanted to continue teaching, but I kind of wanted like a new experience. So I started to really investigate what it would be like to teach in another country and what kind of challenges would you face. And one of my big things that I looked for was I really wanted to take in the culture of a new country and take in the language, because I felt, honestly, I felt a little stupid only knowing one language.
Right.
And I searched around, you know, everything from Taiwan, Korea, Europe, and I really felt like, wow, if I go to Japan, I am definitely going to be forced to learn their language and really learn their culture to fit in and make it there in teaching. And that was really why I chose Japan, to continue teaching, number one. And number two, to be fully immersed in a language and culture.
Had you been to Japan before?
Never been to Japan. Barely knew anything about it, really, before I started to research different places.
When you started to research it, what were you kind of finding out? Because, you know, if you do a search on YouTube, there's just as many positive videos about Japan as there are negative videos about Japan,
yeah,
you know?
True,
all these people, gaijin getting angry at all the Japanese ways, and, you know, so when you started to do some research, what were your initial thoughts about it?
Well, the one thing I really noticed was that, I guess I should say I noticed this a bit after I got here too, was a lot of stuff was out of date.
Right.
Stuff was pretty obsolete. A lot of stuff was written about the bubble era.
Right.
And unfortunately, the internet wasn't as helpful as I would have liked, especially at the time of J-vloggers, the Japanese video loggers were not very many at that time. I think there was maybe Hiko Simon and Gimme a Break Man, if I'm correct, at that time when I started looking.
Right.
So I didn't really find that much stuff about it. And the stuff I did find was related to companies that used to bring people over, Akaiwa, that used to bring people over, like Nova and the Jet Program and stuff like that. And I noticed that no matter what, even if it was an outdated site, they definitely said you kind of had to submerge yourself into the way that Japan worked. You couldn't really just bring over your Western ways and be, you know, bullheaded with them. And that kind of attracted me in that sense. So that was one thing I found across the board, that it said, you know, you're not going to come here and, you know, flout your Westernness, I guess you should say.
Not to you know, bash any Americans, but kind of the stereotype is that Americans go to another country and then complain that it's nothing like America.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, that's very true. I still see that now. You know, a lot of what I call the fifth year college students. Nothing against young people who come to Japan. I still would like to consider myself young. But some people come over. I guess it doesn't happen as much because Nova's gone now. Well, it's kind of gone. And they used to just come over with Nova and treat it like a fifth year of college and party and, yeah, kind of just, why isn't it like my country type deal?
Right.
And, I agree with you on that aspect, definitely.
For those of you who don't know, Nova was a large English language school, right?
Mm-hmm.
That went bankrupt because
the owners... I actually came up with them.
You came over with Nova before they went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Because the owners weren't managing the books properly, to say the least.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it.
So you came over here with Nova, and what was that like when you first arrived in Japan? Did they actually take care of you? Did the school take care of you? Were you left on your own?
To be perfectly blunt, it was a pretty negative experience. I really don't feel like anybody should come over here through that. If you can avoid doing that, I would highly suggest it. They treated employees like cattle, pretty much. And 2 months after I got here, they went bankrupt. So my experience was not very good.
Did you ever think about heading back?
Honestly, yeah. In my first, probably after I got past about 3 months, but you know, that was actually something I had read about online, was you're going to get, they said the honeymoon period is 3 months and you're really going to hit a wall and be like, wow, I'm actually living here. I'm not, just a tourist anymore. And everything that I'm dealing with every day is going to be the rest of my life here if I continue to live here.
Right.
And I guess I was at kind of a bad time because you're here where you're pretty much, you've dug in, you've settled into the society, but you still don't know enough language unless you, studied extensively or taken college classes. I was studying, but I could barely still speak Japanese. I still really didn't understand the culture at all. There was quite a bit I didn't understand. And all my friends got sent back. They didn't necessarily get sent back, but Nova collapsed.
Right.
And every single person I came over with was gone. I came over with, on my plane, there was about 40 teachers. And myself and one other teacher remained after that.
Wow.
That was, yeah. So I lost like all my friends, all my gaijin friends.
After 2 months.
Yeah. So my third month was really rough for me.
A friend of mine, I moved to Japan from Thailand. I was living in Thailand for a couple years before I came here. And a friend of mine who just moved actually the other way, he moved from Japan to Thailand, was giving me advice. And he said, until you get the language down, the first thing you got to do in Japan is make Japanese friends. Because you'll rely on them for so many things.
Yeah.
And I'm really finding that too now, trying to get a telephone and my electricity, how to pay that and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I can imagine it must have been difficult after the second month to suddenly be completely on your own.
Yeah, because I had to find everything. You couldn't stay in your Nova apartment anymore. I had to do pretty much all of it. But yeah, pretty much the same advice you got. I started to find Japanese friends and that's the great thing about this country is people will really help you out with that stuff. I mean, it might just be somebody at work, just a common like employee you work with every day. And if you've asked them to even do stuff like, hey, help me set up a phone, help me set up electricity, they're more than willing. They're actually quite excited to help you. That's one great thing about this country.
I found the same. Now, let me ask you, you came over with Nova, and obviously that situation wasn't that great. However, someone else who's saying is in America or in Europe and is thinking about coming to Japan through an Eikaiwai or through a language school, would you still tell them not to do that way, or is it just because Nova was not that great?
I would say just make sure you can investigate it as thoroughly as possible. I would say my number one advice would be if you can talk to an employee there, that would be golden before you come over. I don't want to bash Eikaiwais because, there's some really good ones out there. But I would say for the most part, if you can stay away from the Eikaiwai route, I would say, my personal suggestion is if you're brave enough and if you have the money, come over here and look for a job because you have so much more to select from. And there's always jobs, especially, now after so many gaijin went home after the earthquake, there's
right.
so many jobs out there, like especially Tokyo and Osaka. If you can do that, I would highly suggest that, if you're brave enough and you got enough money, like I said, I would highly suggest that over, you know, using one of these companies that just brings you over, unless you've thoroughly, thoroughly investigated it.
Because with these companies, you, like you said, you were on a plane of 40 other teachers. Mm-hmm. So you're just another employee that's coming over. And mm-hmm. I think perhaps some of these Aikawais look at foreign language teachers as, you know, commodities, like can be easily yeah. replaced with the next one coming on the plane.
Yeah, like I said, cattle.
Right, right. So, but then on the other side too, coming over here to Japan on your own is really difficult. Like you said, save up a lot of money.
Yeah.
And be prepared to pay for a lot of fees and sign a lot of paperwork.
Yeah, it's intimidating. I say to do that. I didn't do it. So it's, you know, it's kind of like hypocritical. But at the same time, I really felt like I would have had a much better start if I had gone that route.
Right.
So, but yeah, you're right. It is really, it's really intimidating.
Well, let me ask you though, is like, you know, most of the gaijin who come here usually go the English teaching route. They either mm-hmm. have gotten a job from overseas and the company brings them over, or they land here and they start teaching English here.
Mm-hmm.
What about someone who is not into teaching English? What if they're a programmer or they're a graphic designer or, like, you know, they're into art or anything? What are the options available for someone like that?
Well, you know, actually, that's probably the number one question I get asked on my channel the most. Can I come over here and do something different? And I would say, you know, I have worked in other fields for short amounts of time. You just, if you're going to do that, especially if you're going to get into the computer programming or graphic design, might be pretty brutal to get in. You got to be able to speak Japanese. I mean, there's just no way you're not going to. I mean, there's some exceptions. Don't get me wrong. Like, I've heard of people who work for military bases.
Right.
And they do like IT work or something like that as a civilian. And, you know, obviously they don't need to speak any Japanese. They're probably totally okay to have none. And I've had other exceptions where there's like internship programs I've heard about and other things like that. But if you're really looking to get into something other than English, and especially if it's a technical job, definitely you're going to have to speak Japanese. I mean, there's just no way around it. And Tokyo's got a lot more options, I'd say, than the rest of Japan as far as being able to completely only speak English. But anywhere else you're going to go, you definitely need to speak Japanese. I mean, and I'm talking at a fluent level.
Because, you know, the demand from the local market is so strong, many Japanese companies will look at you and they almost look at you as a liability. You know, why should I hire a gaijin and deal with the language problem, the cultural problems, etc., when I can...
And I'm sponsoring the visa, too.
Right.
I can look bad for them if they're sponsoring the visa and you do something crazy.
Right. So your suggestion for people then who are maybe looking into that is, A, brush up on your Japanese as much as possible.
Yeah.
Or B, come to Japan, start teaching English, learn the culture, learn the language, and then perhaps once you're here, more opportunities will open up to you.
Definitely. That's probably the best plan of action. What you just said there is probably the best. Start with teaching. You'll be fine with that for a while. But yeah, take in the culture, adapt, learn, like we've said before, the harmony of the workplace, and then look into other jobs. Unless you went to college for Japanese and you're already fluent.
Right. What was it like for you in learning the language? Did you find it particularly difficult or particularly easy or what?
I think where I struggled the most is I tried to start out by learning almost entirely from books and websites, which there is some benefit to, but I kind of got hung up at first. My biggest problem is I got hung up and number one, having perfect grammar, and number two, making sure I used exactly what the book said. And with Osaka, that can be a huge problem because, as you know, we speak Osaka-ben.
Right.
You know, they don't speak Kanto-ben like in Tokyo.
Right.
So you're probably not going to understand much if you come to Osaka and you've only studied Keigo, the polite form of Japanese, because, number one, people are far more casual here. They talk fast, and, you know, they use the Osaka dialect. So, number one, that was my hardest, was understanding the Osaka dialect, because no book or website I looked at in America even told me that I'd be experiencing that. And number two, I think this is probably the best advice I could give anybody who's really wants to be able to learn and speak Japanese, is worry more just about speaking it than anything else. Trip over your sentences, mess them up, absolutely butcher the language. Japanese people are quite nice about you just even making an attempt. So don't get so hung up on that. You know, worrying about, oh, I sound so dumb with my grammar. It's horrible. I sound like a barbarian. Don't worry too much about that. You'll learn. You'll start to fill in the gaps, but try your best just to speak as much as what you already know. Hang on just one or two words if you want to, but try to speak more than anything else. Don't worry so much about books.
Would you recommend hiring a language teacher? Like, I know that that's kind of, it can be expensive, but like, could someone studying online and in books get enough Japanese that when they land here, they could speak to other Japanese people on a conversational level?
If you're saying like if they practiced with a teacher before?
No, like if they're saying in America and they're like watching YouTube videos and they're studying by the books, but without an actual Japanese teacher, when they get here, is that enough for them to be able to converse with Japanese people? Or do they need a teacher to get the pronunciation right, the grammar right, all that kind of stuff?
That's a difficult question. I mean, there's some people who adapt to language quite well, and they might actually be okay. I'm not one of those people. I actually take quite a while to learn languages. I would say, unless you are a genius in learning languages, you're probably not going to be able to. Maybe you'll be able to speak, and you know, your pronunciation might be a little bad. That's expected. But I would say it's even harder to understand. At least it was for me. Like,
right, yeah.
Whatever phrases they've given to you that they say they're going to respond in, get ready, they're going to say something totally different.
Yeah.
The big thing in Osaka is they say no Osaka person can say the same sentence twice. If you say,
really?
Boy, I didn't understand that. Can you say it again? They'll totally change it.
Yeah, on Tokyo or on Bangkok podcast, my podcast show back in Thailand, we had a guest on who said the same thing, that he studied these books just religiously before he came to Thailand. Mm-hmm. And when he would talk to people, he would kind of have in his head the answer that they were already going to say. But mm-hmm. then they would say something totally different, mm-hmm. and it would completely throw him off, and he wouldn't know how to respond to it.
Yeah, yeah. That was definitely, especially with Osaka Ben, the, just the answers and how fast they would say it, and you know the suffixes especially were just totally different from anything I expected.
Were you surprised at how little English there was when you got there? Like, I mean, people speaking it, signage, all that kind of stuff.
I wasn't so surprised in places that are of Japanese tradition, such as in izakaya. I never really would have expected, but I was surprised at places that kind of sold themselves off as Western-based or English-based, such as like, you can't just go to McDonald's and say, hey, I want a cheeseburger. They just look at you like, what are you even saying?
Right.
I was surprised by that even the simplest stuff was completely unknown in Osaka. And even, you know, even some interviews I would go to, they would pretty much either speak in broken English or almost expect me to do it in Japanese. So, I was a little bit surprised by that. That's for sure.
Would you say to someone that in trying to get a job, say that at an English teaching job, is it important for them to learn Japanese?
I would say yes, because of the fact of how much it'll help you out with harmony in the workplace. And I guess that's a whole nother topic, but once you start to understand how well and how much you have to kind of assimilate to the harmony in the Japanese workplace, you'll start to understand how much you learning the language is appreciated by the Japanese. So I would say, yes, it's definitely worth it.
That's interesting. You mentioned that because that was one aspect of your videos that I really enjoyed, was your knowledge about the harmony in Japan and how important that is to Japanese culture, because I don't see many other foreigners who are making videos who really seem to get that. You know, there seems to be some gaijin who've been here a long time and they still don't get it. Mm. Now, obviously some do, but talk a bit about that. I'm specifically referring to your JFAC number 125. If you're listening to this, go to Unrest's channel. I'll link to it on my website and look for number 125, where you talk about how important harmony is, not losing your temper, not getting upset, is to the Japanese culture.
Well, it's actually, It's kind of something I learned almost from other people, kind of, in a sense. I've always been a pretty calm guy in general. I don't really tend to get too explosive, aggressive, or boisterous with my temperament in general. But I did, of course, meet people who did, who, as you said, you know, came over here and almost kind of tried to, you know, force Western tradition on people here. I'd seen it. And I guess I would just see the repercussions from that. And it really startled me, like, wow, that really definitely makes everybody extremely uncomfortable in the workplace. And I started to observe, well, what makes them comfortable then? What do the other people do that, you know, what do Japanese people do with each other that makes them comfortable? So that's something I started to actually sit down and really observe and try to, like, take in as much as I could. Because I started to realize how important it was from watching other people make, I guess, massive mistakes, such as, like you said, explode with anger or just even get too personal with stuff sometimes where you don't really want to get too personal in the workplace.
Really? Like, you mean like you can't ask someone like, hey, how was your weekend or something like that? You don't do that here?
So, for instance, conflict at work would be something that needs to be kind of tiptoed around. If you're either experiencing it yourself or you happen to notice that it's happening between other employees, it would definitely be something where, especially if it has nothing to do with you, completely you need to stay out of it. Don't try to get into gossip. Don't try to get into rumors. It would be pretty it would be a pretty ostracizing experience if you did that, because it's not really something you want to get into in Japan. If it's not your business and it has nothing to do with you as far as conflicts, then you really got to stay out of it, because it would be, I would say, really out of place in the Japanese workplace to just even delve in a little bit, like, oh, what are they fighting about? Oh, what's going on recently between this teacher and that teacher? And they would definitely shy away from even getting into that and be uncomfortable if you had brought it up.
Do you find at all that your own personal identity here is kind of, I don't want to say melting away, but kind of changing a bit? Like,
you know, yeah, definitely.
I meet many foreigners who, you know, gaijin who come here or leave their home country. And one of the main reasons why they leave is they always say, like, I want to start a new path in life, forge a new identity, you know, create something new and exciting. Mm-hmm. And then they come to Japan, and the whole deal with this country is to conform.
Yeah.
So I always find it kind of ironic that these people leave their home country to forge this new path in their life, and then they come to Japan, and the whole deal here is, no. Be like the rest of us.
Yeah, join the hive.
Right. Yeah. So do you ever kind of feel a bit of a conflict with that? Like, Do you kind of feel yourself becoming a bit of a robot salaryman type of thing at times or not?
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. I definitely say one of the most noticeable things about myself is making strong opinions or being outspoken at the workplace. Not that I was a loudmouth back in America, but if I felt something could be improved, I would bring it up with a higher up, not necessarily to create conflict, but I thought possibly to improve or make something more efficient. Right. Whereas here in Japan, you know, it's that shogunai attitude where nothing can be done. Right. You know, you don't try to change something that's been in place for sometimes hundreds of years, right. You know, especially I'd have to say when I work in the public schools, you know, there's obviously some input I could have as far as how English could be absorbed better is a nice way to put it.
Right.
And but I'm not going to come here and change that. That's one thing I really had to come to terms with. I had to understand that you're not going to butt in and suddenly change something that's been done by the Board of Education just because you think your way's better. And because of that, I would say I'm probably more quiet than I would be at American workplace, and I'm definitely keep my opinions to myself.
Don't you think, though, if I can, you know, let me play devil's advocate here, is that Japan needs some change. They need gaijin input into how certain things are done. But if all the gaijin here are staying quiet, nothing's ever going to change.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
If you look at their school system, I mean, this country studies English fanatically, more so than most other countries I've seen. They've got English language schools everywhere. They start even in kindergarten now, I think, or some really young age, right?
Yeah.
And yet, when they graduate high school, university, they can barely put a sentence together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously that system isn't working to produce fluent speaking, English speaking Japanese. Don't you think that, you know, perhaps Gaijin coming here, if they've got some educational background like you have, should speak up a bit and say, hey, wait a minute, I think we should try it this way.
Yeah, I think there are going to be some schools you work at where they are probably even open-minded enough to want to hear those suggestions. Like, I have had some schools where teachers are upset with the way, especially junior high schools where there actually is an English teacher and they're more passionate about it, especially if they're a young English teacher. I notice they're very open to what ways can we change this to make it that they, like you said, actually speak English, you know?
Right.
And when that opportunity arrives, I feel definitely speak your mind, because some teachers are really open to it. If there's other teachers set in their ways, like I've experienced quite a few times, there is still room for you to make suggestions, but there's a certain way to go about it. Right. And I think that can best be explained by Hiko Simon made a video about how to argue in Japanese. And if I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but I would say definitely learn the proper way to argue in Japanese, where it's not an aggressive, all-out combative argument and not ferocious by any means, but more so subtle hints that try to perhaps change their mind to the same thinking as you.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I think definitely, you know, there's places that where you're offered the opportunity, speak up, yes. And if you're not, you know, still be passionate about what you do, but make sure you go the right route.
What has been for you one of the most confusing or complexing or something that made you scratch your head about Japanese culture?
I would say there's a lot of stubbornness in Japan. I can't really think of a nicer way to say it. There's a lot of stubbornness set in, well, this is everybody says to do it this way, so we do it this way. For example, I'd say one of the most ridiculous things ever, and I've researched it, so I know a bit about it, is the water bottles that are around plants. You've seen it, right?
Yeah.
They take the giant water bottles, fill them up, and put them around anything that they don't want cats to climb on.
Right.
That's why they do it. They think that the light reflecting off the water scares cats away from messing up whatever they're trying to protect.
Right.
And this comes from a TV show, one of these variety shows. I don't know exactly which one, but one time it was discussed on a show that, oh, I do this and it scares away the cats. But anybody who has a little bit of knowledge or has researched, you know, any just a tiny bit about animals in general knows that a cat will look at it maybe once or twice, maybe be scared, and then be like, okay, this is just a water bottle. I'm going to climb around it and do what I want.
Right, right.
But because a TV show said it, they followed it religiously, and you still see it everywhere.
Yeah, same in my neighborhood. And some people, they've got their whole front walkway lined with bottles.
Yeah,
it looks terrible.
Yeah. So you're worried about a little spot being messed up by a cat, so you'll ruin the entire look of your place by putting water bottles everywhere. Yeah. It's counteractive, if you ask me. So, yeah, I guess there's a lot of counteractive stuff I see like that where I'm just like, what? Well, it looks horrible now. Why would you do this?
It seems like there's a lot of contradictions here.
Yeah. Contradictions and stubbornness.
Right. It's like they're like super efficient but also super inefficient at the same time.
Yeah.
Like getting my apartment, I needed a mobile phone number. They wouldn't rent it to me if I didn't have a mobile phone. But then when I went to the mobile phone company, they wouldn't give me a mobile phone unless I had an address in Japan. And I just kind of looked at them like, excuse me?
Yeah, one friend said it best to me one time. She said, Japan lives in the future and the past all at the same time.
Yeah.
That was the best comment I ever heard about it, yeah.
Now, you recently had a baby, is that correct?
Yeah.
What was that experience like going through the Japanese hospital system, were you worried about it? Was it decent? Were you scared? What was that like?
Yeah, it was a little bit scary. I mean, in general, I'm not as sure about some of the experiences I've had in Japan. Anybody who goes to the hospital once here knows that whether you break your leg or you get a sore throat, you get the same bag of medicine.
Right.
I've only been to the hospital twice since I've been in Japan, and both experiences were, I wouldn't say bad, but not exactly very helpful. Like, I didn't feel better or get any kind of medicine that helped or really even get knowledge of anything that helped me out. So I'd say I was a little bit worried. And actually, we did kind of have a little bit of a bad experience. We started at a women's clinic that's specifically only for women having babies. And that's something you would suspect would be quite good at handling it, because that's their specialty.
Right.
But we started to hear stuff from other people who had said they had gone to the same one and were really unhappy with the service, really unhappy with the quality of the doctors, and that they were actually quite bad at what they do. And as we continued to go there, we found everybody was really right. My wife had a kind of a condition during that was a little bit critical, and they totally didn't catch on to that. They messed up the sex of the baby, which, okay, I can let that pass. I mean, that still happens. And the most upsetting thing was my wife had a condition where it would have been a danger to the baby to make a major trip in her condition, but they didn't even catch that. And they said, yeah, go ahead and take a trip to America, like a 16-hour, you know, flight. And before we left, she was a little bit worried and decided, just I'll go to one more, get one more opinion. The next place we went to, the doctor's like, you definitely cannot go in your state. You would jeopardize the baby's life. And I mean, it was like that bad of a drastic call. Like, they had messed up that bad.
Wow.
So yeah, so I have to say I was a little bit upset with that. I would say, and I'm not saying that hospitals are bad here, but I would say it's important to get a second and even a third opinion if you're not totally sure about something. Make sure you ask around and get people to tell you what hospital is best. Because what she did do was go to another one that people started to recommend, that they're like, well, you know, I started at that one and then I ended up at this one because it had such a better reputation. And luckily, when we went to that one, the service was great. The doctors were great. She was taken care of great. And luckily, you know, we had a healthy baby because of it.
Right.
But, I mean, the other place was so bad that, I mean, they could have had multiple cases for malpractice in America from some of the stuff I had heard, like after some of the horror stories I heard about that place, because we started to research it more after we left. And, wow, it was bad. Yeah.
That's something that surprised me when I was in Thailand, talking to my Japanese friends there. Many of them who come to Thailand for many major medical procedure, because one, it's a lot cheaper than in Japan. But mm-hmm. I was surprised when they told me that the quality of the care is a lot better in Thailand. Mm-hmm. Most people assume that Japan's such a, you know, first world technologically advanced country that the hospitals would be top notch. But the Japanese themselves warned me, same thing. They said, if you have a problem, go to two or three different hospitals and talk to two or three different doctors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because their service there can be, you know, dangerous.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, that was one thing that really surprised me too, was when we think of Japan this is before you do any kind of research at all. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is technology, the highest grade technology. So you would think, okay, the country that produces the highest grade technology would definitely have the best services.
Right.
Including, you know, hospitals.
Right.
But if there's one thing I've learned, it's you can have the greatest technology in the world, but if you're not a good doctor, none of that matters, you know?
Right, right. So now that you've got your baby, you've been here 5 years, obviously your plan is to stay in Japan for the long haul. What's the future hold for Unrested? Do you miss America at all? Do you want to stay here?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, recently I actually took, and this is the first time since I've come to Japan, I took my first trip back to America.
Wow, really? You've been here 5 years and you didn't go back?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty wild, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my first trip back. It was about 2 months ago now. And yeah, that kind of definitely told me I want to stay in Japan. Not that I have a big problem with America or anything. I don't hate on my own country or anything like that. You know, we still got a lot of great things going for us. But I guess it was almost like reverse culture shock. I feel at this point a little more comfortable in Japan.
Yeah,
strangely enough, I'd have to say I enjoy certain aspects of Japan that I would never be able to enjoy in America. For example, being able to say almost anything I want in English anytime I want. That's kind of nice. Nobody understands what I'm saying. Right. So I can, you know, maybe I don't always use it for the most positive reasons, right. But that's one aspect I like. I guess I kind of like that I have constant privacy because I can speak a language that not many people know here.
Right.
That goes a long way. I was really surprised how much I really enjoyed that and how careful I had to be not to suddenly blurt stuff out in English in America after I'd been here for 5 years.
You're going to still keep making videos?
I will continue to make them as long as I can. I think I regret that I can't make them as much as I used to. That's one thing I really wish I could have the time to make as much as I used to. And maybe eventually one day my life will relax enough that I can do that. But yeah, I will make them, I think, as long as I can possibly can, or until maybe YouTube cancels my account or something. I don't know.
Well, that's cool. Thanks, Anrester, for coming on the show.
No
problem. I really enjoyed talking to you. And like I said, if you are thinking about coming to Japan, I would highly recommend looking at his channel because he has a lot of good videos about what it's like to actually live here. Like you mentioned earlier in the show, a lot of stuff on the web is out of date. Going to his website and watching his videos will give you a really good look into life in Japan right now. Your website is youtube.com/unrested, right?
Yep.
Awesome. Well, great. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Unrested for coming on the show. If you are thinking about moving to Japan or you're interested in living here, I would definitely recommend checking out his YouTube channel because his videos give you a really good insight into what it's actually like to live here. It's got 140 videos, so they take a while to go through, but highly, highly recommended. Don't forget, if you're in Tokyo and you want to check out some robots, the International Robot Exhibition is happening at the Tokyo Exhibition Center from November 9th to the 12th. Go there and see what the future of robotics is. That should be a lot of fun. That's it. Thanks for listening, everyone. I am Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.